Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the stage, across the chicken wire fence, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Bill?
George, I refuse to seek other people's approval. Is that okay with you, I mean?
I got to think about that.
Yeah, I figured. A little heady for you tonight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, George, here we are once again, public servants here trying to bring wisdom to this very broad subject of recovery, hosted by two guys that have a very limited appeal.
And very limited wisdom. But what we're trying to do is take God's wisdom and apply it to our lives. We've failed a lot at this, Bill, and we share that on the program, but we're trying to move forward, press on towards the goal, as it says in Philippians.
Mm-hmm. George, you know, it says in Romans chapter 7, you know, Paul says, I don't understand what I do, for what I want to do, I don't do, but what I hate to do, I do. I know that nothing good lives in my sinful nature. I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out.
Yes.
How about that?
It's the sin that lives in us.
Yeah, yeah. And that gets us to the fact in step one, which we're going to talk about tonight. I admit I need help, but I'm powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing and that my life is unmanageable.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it is. We look at the 12-step movement, and they've done great work. We admit we're powerless over drugs and alcohol, that our lives are unmanageable. But let's step back and go, what do we have control over? What are we powerful enough to have control over? And the answer is absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
My next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God. And I think we look at this step a lot and go, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, let's move on to the program. But the second part of the step, our lives are unmanageable, I believe that any time I look at something and I go, boy, I don't like that, I'm really kind of judging God there because he allowed it to happen. And what I have to get back to in step one is I don't have all the information. I was just reading in a devotional this weekend about his ways are a lot higher than our ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that. I forget that I don't have all the information. I got a life situation every week that happens, and I think I know what I want and what to do, and I got to step back and go, no, I don't even know what's good for me.
Well, and how many brain cells are firing in your head at this stage?
Three.
Of life? Three, maybe.
You know, we've killed a few.
I'd say more like two.
Two?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little mean, but you're probably accurate, yeah.
And they probably stick together.
The memory ones are gone.
Totally,
so.
Yeah.
But that's step one to me. I'm powerless over everything. And we hear in the recovery rooms a lot the term, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to look at that a little bit because that describes me.
Well,
I've got this.
Yeah. I also, George, want to pick out Ezekiel 28, verse 2. It says, in the pride of your heart, you say, I am God.
Yep.
But you are just a man and not a God, though you think you are as wise as a God.
Well, that is the egomaniac with the
inferiority
complex.
That's what I mean. I threw that in. I thought that was very timely, the way I had that ready to go.
After 5 years, that's a timely
comment.
But
I'm just saying, we prepared nothing in advance, and all of a sudden, boom, there we go.
Because we're not that close.
We prefer not to talk.
But the inferiority complex comes where I know I don't have the game to carry it off. And a lot of times we'll go out and make a real effort. We're going to control a situation. I know what needs to be done, and we get into it, and we realize, not only was I wrong about what I started, I don't have the ability to finish it. Help me out, God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really step one.
All right, so step one, let me just tie this verse in too. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 9, this is the Living Bible translation. It says, we saw how powerless we were to help ourselves, but that was good, for then we put everything into the hands of God, who alone can save us, or he can even raise the dead.
Love that.
Isn't that good? Yeah.
And that's what we get to after, I believe, the Holy Spirit convicts us that we are powerless. We don't get that on our own.
And, George, I think you're very right about that. And I think right before you put your foot into step one, admitting you're powerless, I think of this verse, and this is out of Matthew, which says, you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. So you reach a point where you go, there is no more me that's of any value. I can get nothing to work anymore. My life is a disaster. I now need to step into God's rule and God's law.
In the recovery,
and God's love.
Yeah, in the recovery rooms, we refer to that as the gift of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And what that makes us is willing to do whatever it takes to get a different outcome. But a lot of us have to be beaten down. We don't come into a life change, flying first class, everything's rolling, we got this, hey, I'm going to change my life. No, you come in when you're too beat up. And you can decide at any time that you're beat up enough. But what most of us do is go to plan B, and we're going to try a little harder and do this, and it just makes it worse. But when God comes in and says, look, the deal's up, you need to do something, and I have a solution.
Mm-hmm. George, I was watching the Olympics this week. Which, did you watch any of that?
No, I was too busy reading the Bible this week.
Yeah.
Is that
so
on?
Prayer and repentance, that kind of thing. That's
Repent
or perish, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had additional free time, so I was watching some of the Olympics, and there was a very interesting interview with Michael Phelps, who after winning, I think, 15 gold medals or something, he had reached a point of now what? Exactly what do I have to look forward to? What is my life about? He was literally having a moment of complete and utter despair where he said, I was at the point where I didn't want to live and I wanted to take my own life. I think to myself, what's missing from this whole thing? I mean, you have the whole world at your feet. You've got the admiration of the entire world. Your name is recognizable just about anywhere, and it's not good enough. And then he started using drinking and some drugs, and he ended up getting a driving while intoxicated, and he had all kinds of legal problems then. But it seems that despite his success and everything else, he was still looking for something.
Well, we're going to fill the God-shaped hole with something.
Yes, we are.
And it's never good enough. Our good friend Tim Keller says they're God substitutes, and they aren't. And eventually, they're going to let you down. Everybody, everything outside of God can't do God's job. And we get to that. And a lot of people listening tonight have had long-term sobriety. And maybe they get a 20-year medallion or a 21-year medallion, and they don't have good relationships in their life, and things aren't working for them. Or maybe they're like I am. They got a 31-year, and they're coming up on 32, and they go, hey, I'm as bad as I was when right before I quit using.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are if we don't get it from God. But we want to take it back. We want to run it. We want to get it from people, places, things, money. Can't give it to you, Bill.
Yeah. You have 32 years coming up in September?
If I live that long. Every day could be my last. But, you know, that's a God thing. And you wanted to bookend step one with what step?
Step 12. Because I want to bring our guest on in just after the break, and I want to talk about, I think his story is not unlike Michael Phelps, where you reach a certain level of success in a sport. You're sort of at the top of your game, and all of a sudden, through the results of an injury and whatnot, he ends up finding himself addicted to opioids and then other drugs, and life sort of collapses.
Well, we're all alike. We're human.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to seek a way to quiet the voices and quiet the pain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I have been at the top at this industry now for 5 years, and there's a letdown.
Award-winning episodes.
I mean, how many
the
more
trophy
awards?
Case out there.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just not good.
They're ordering
for me
another
anymore.
One. The next one is going to be Cherrywood. The last one was Rosewood.
Yeah. A little tacky for us.
Well, I think so, too.
But, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction in knowing we're carrying this station. You know, I do.
Yeah.
Because I care about other people.
Right. Right. I agree. So, anyway, I was just going to say, let's bookend it with step 12 briefly as well, because I think our guest is going to talk about that in his recovery. And it's going to be very interesting.
Well, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carried the message to others and practiced these principles in all our affairs. And what we're talking about, I always look at the book of James, which was one of the early books where the 12-step originators, where they got the 12 steps, they got it out of the Bible. And if we could talk about that for a second, the early years, AA from
never against that.
1935 to 39 had much higher sobriety rates than they do now. And we know that from the foreword to the first edition. They talk about it. It's very interesting to me because they didn't have a book.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Bible.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the steps. They had six steps from the Oxford movement. But they got down on their knees and prayed and read out of the Bible, Sermon on the Mount, you know, Matthew 5, 6, 7, I believe, and then chapter 13 in 1 Corinthians and the book of James. And then they write the book, and they get the higher power instead of Jesus Christ. And gosh, who would have known but the sobriety rates would go down?
Mm-hmm.
When we look at step 12, to me, it's faith without works is dead. You can't share what you don't have. But really what happens is we come in to have God save us from our problem, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. But really what he's calling us to do, and I just love this, is, okay, you work for me now. Your purpose in life is to tell other people what I did in your life so I can do it in theirs. And for me, God's call in my life, Bill, is to help other people get sober and get saved by meeting Jesus Christ. We have a lot of people who listen to the show. Occasionally somebody might say at a meeting, hey, listen to these guys. They're a little off, but they have a good content. If you're sober and you're not saved, you're leaving everything on the table. This is not about quitting a behavior. This is about developing a relationship with the living God. And maybe you have long-term sobriety. Maybe you have 21 years of sobriety and you're not that happy in your life. Well, the reason is, it's not about you stopping a behavior. You need to develop a relationship with the living God, and that can only be done through Jesus Christ.
You know, George, I usually drift off when you're talking.
I do too.
But no, that actually held my attention.
Did it?
Tonight. Yeah. Yeah, I just did a little bit of scribbling here on a note.
By, you know, I'm looking about Acts 4:12, by no other name are you saved.
Right.
And it's interesting, if you bring that up in a recovery room,
you're dead.
You're dead, but you can talk about the Buddhist meditation yoga meeting with the candlelight that starts at midnight, and everybody goes, oh, that's so cool. George is such a cool guy. Well, they don't say that anymore. I'm the old guy, but...
No, they don't.
They never did they?
No, no. We have a wonderful guest on the studio line. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to bring him onto the show. Stay tuned. You're in for a great award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill, George, we've got Danimal on the board tonight. Thank you, Dan, for being here. Filling in, doing a great job, as always. George, I'm excited to have our guest on the program tonight because he's so passionate about recovery, and he's not afraid of being in front of a microphone, and he has got quite a story to tell, especially with his athletic performance. He was once Mr. Colorado.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Were you Mr. Edina?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
I'm trying to introduce the guest, George. Let's not make it about me, right?
Okay.
Okay?
We'll do that later.
We'll do that later, at dinner maybe. But our guest tonight is Kent Paul. Kent, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. You guys are fantastic. I love your content, and you actually make me laugh and such a great content show and helping change lives in Minnesota and all across the country. And praise God for you guys.
Ah, knock it
off. Yeah. I like this guy.
This flattery is working fine for me.
Yeah, let's talk some more about us.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it's all about you, right?
Well, yeah. No, tonight we're going to focus on our guest, which is you. But your story.
About me.
Yeah, your story is a strong one. It's God did some truly amazing things in your life, things only he could do. Because you were Mr. I Can Do This Myself for a lot of years, weren't you?
Yes. That's right. I really was. I was very self-sufficient, and I really thought that I was pretty much alone in the world. You know, I am a preacher's kid. A lot of people don't know that. But I grew up with knowing a father, or I was a very authoritative type father. It was very quiet, and I kind of saw him almost like a God type figure. And I was kind of taught as a very young boy, 3, 4, or 5 years old, that God was a punishing God. That's the only kind of God that I knew was try to stay off his radar so you won't be punished and a bolt of lightning come down and just kind of send you to hell, kind of growing up in that fashion. So the whole story of my uprising into my success to the downfall into the abyss, I never really had a close relationship at all with a God that I could view as someone that could be a savior, someone that could be a merciful God, kind type, helping relationship type of God. And that's very powerful to kind of begin my story, to kind of share where the foundation actually comes from. And we learn that through recovery, going back and say, you know, what is your higher power? What is the higher power to you? and kind of identifying that and kind of where your beliefs come from and where my views and my perceptions came from. And my perceptions and views kind of started at age five when they actually put me into sports. And, you know, my first memory as we go through recovery, we go back to our very first memory of life. And my very first memory was at actually age about 3.5, 4 years old and going into preschool and kindergarten. I always felt very off and very different, which is very common for everyone. Most everyone is in recovery and addiction is just kind of always feeling off and different. And I remember, I mean, my first memories, I just remember always having like an underlying levels of anxiety and just always feeling a different thing. I just wanted to feel normal. And I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know why I felt this way. I didn't know what to do. But when my parents put me into sports and they put me into football and baseball, and suddenly I was able to excel in that. And God did give me the gift to be very athletic. And all of a sudden I started to feel a little bit more normal. And I felt kind of more accepted and people kind of wanted to be around me. And all of a sudden I kind of was able to mask that undertones of anxiety and I kind of felt a part of. So very early on, my perceptions and my beliefs that were formed from this is that if I perform, I will be accepted, I will be liked, and I will be loved. And that was just deeply ingrained into my story from even the age 4 and 5 years old. So that belief system carried me all the way into junior high and high school, all the way into college, where I had scholarships offered for me for both baseball and football. And so I did play college ball, and I was excelling very well, and I was getting along in the world because my athletic ability got me the attention that I felt was fulfilling. I thought this was my purpose. This is what life's about. All you got to do is perform well, and you'll get everything you want in life. You'll get the love. You'll get the recognition. You'll be accepted. And in this whole time, I kind of have a God concept that was kind of still very, very far away from me. And I stayed away from drugs and alcohol all through that time just because, you know, I didn't want to go to hell, just the way that I was raised. And so, and I was kind of more addicted to sports anyways. And I was kind of viewed, well, why would I ever take drugs and alcohol? That's just going to keep me away from my real purpose, and that's to be a performer. So in college, something pretty dramatic happened where a kid on the field, as we were all being hazed, I'm sure everyone knows what the word hazing means in college, and as sororities and fraternities do, well, college teams are their own fraternity. You know, we are our own type of a club. And so one day the game was canceled, and the upperclassmen and the assistant coaches called a team meeting, and they all had us come to the field, and they made a big pit. And I grew up my whole entire life in Colorado, so I was born and raised my whole entire life there. And I'm in Boca Raton, Florida now, but I was in Florida I was in Colorado at that time, and they dug a big pit and filled it full of water and ice and slush, and they had us strip down to our underwear. And it was kind of snowing and freezing, and they had us kind of run and do a belly flop in this puddle, or more of a pit, I should say. And the kid that went right behind me dove into this 8-inch pit, and he broke his neck. And that really started to change my whole entire story away from team sports and all the elements of pain. And we had to testify in court, and coaches got fired. And long story short, I was so traumatized by this whole entire thing with anxiety, I actually walked away from my scholarship. And I kind of felt very, very lost with my identity. And I started to partake in NyQuil every single night. And I started to learn that I can't escape my feelings and emotions from the world by taking the substance. But I soon found a new substitute, and that was something called bodybuilding. And that happened when a kid in college approached me in the gym training one day, because I didn't know what else to do with myself. I'm not going to be a performer. I don't like sports anymore. I'm working out in the gym. This guy comes up to me, asks me to be his workout partner. And I said, what does that mean? And he says, well, it's for bodybuilding, and let me show you what this is. And he showed me this whole world of bodybuilding. And all of a sudden, I was like, wow, I can get all the attention just to myself now. I don't have to have the threat of the pain of teams, something out of my control. I can control everything.
So you don't have to share it with teammates or an inadequate co-host, right?
Right. Exactly.
All right.
Exactly what my whole new concept was.
All right. Just checking.
And Yes. And so I went ahead and went all in on this whole thing called bodybuilding. It's all about me and my attention. And I thought I could really get fulfilled by doing this. And I got discovered out in Venice, California. This is all very long stories, but I obtained the number one sponsor in the world. The owner, the president of Gold's Gym World Franchise, sponsored me. He introduced me to all the top pros, the nutritionist, and I just kept being fed and fed and fed that this is my purpose. This is my purpose. You know, if I just become a champion bodybuilder and if I just become Mr. Colorado, and that's how I'm going to find my happiness. I will someday be fulfilled and I will be happy someday if I just get the titles, because I just always felt less than. And here I was, you know, 260 pounds and then 270 pounds. And then the height of my career, you know, I'm 285 pounds at 2% body fat. And I was one of the most, you know, elite champion bodybuilders around. And after I obtained the title of being Mr. Colorado, and I'm doing nationals, and I'm in magazines, and I'm in a movie, and autographs, and just all the stuff really started to come to me. And I still just felt so miserable inside. And I just never could figure out what is wrong with me. How can I be obtaining all my goals? And now I have complete control of my life. I have control of it all. I don't need other people. I don't need God. I don't need anything else around me because I can control everything. And it's working. I'm getting titles. I'm getting attention. I got the most beautiful woman in Colorado as my girlfriend. And I have all these people wanting to be around me and autographs. And everywhere I go, I get recognized. And people are paying for my meals and VIP treatments. And I'm going to Miami. I'm going to Las Vegas. You know, I'm going to L.A. I'm deep in the scene, and I just couldn't figure out why. What's it going to take for me to be happy? I just couldn't figure it out, and I become, you know, world ranked and nationally ranked, and I was just so lost in it. And I remember one time, I actually went to my father at that time, and because I did see my father as a very wise man. Again, he's the preacher, but I just still viewed him as a wise man. I sat down with him one day. And here I have at the height of my career, the height of my popularity. I sat down and I said, Dad, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I don't know how to be happy. I don't know how. I help me. And he said, you know, son, you know, I love you, but you need to be roughed up a bit. You have no gratitude. And I had no idea what he meant by that. And I was so offended. I had a resentment towards him. I left the house, and I was very angry, actually, that my own father was kind of wishing harm in my life. And I couldn't understand why he would say this to me. And so a few months later, I'm still training for my next competition. I have Mr. Olympia is coaching me, and I mean, again, I'm just really, really in the height of my fame. And I really remember coming home from my training one day. I'm getting close to my next competition, and I was overwhelming pain and anxiety come over me, and I drop down to my knees, and I have a home looking over the golf course. I got all this stuff, and I just start crying, and I just slipped up my arms. I said, God, I said, if you're up there, and if you can hear me, if you're even there, please do whatever you have to do to me that someday I might be happy. And I tell you guys, God was listening. And wow, was he listening. I said, be careful what you pray for, because God does listen. And so I went ahead and did my last competition, and I actually retired from bodybuilding because I really experienced a lot of darkness of it, and all these top pros that I thought was going to be the way I would be happy, and they're involved with homosexuality, and they're doing sex act to judges, and swinging parties, and deep drugs and ecstasies, and there's just a lot of darkness of these heroes that I had in my life, and the guys that you see on the cover of Muscle Fitness magazine. I was getting close to these guys, and I really realized that the pot of gold that I was chasing for 11 straight years really was a pot of coal. And I was just like, man, what have I done? Have I wasted 11 years of my life chasing a rainbow, hoping that if I just got to the rainbow and the pot of gold, I'd be happy? And really, there's a pot of coal there. And I was so broken. I walked away from bodybuilding. I retired, and it all began. And for the very first time in my life, I looked in the mirror and I said, who am I? I had no idea who I was. I had no idea where I was going. I had no more identity. For the first time in my entire life, I was not performing at anything. I was not going after anything. And a short time after I announced my retirement, all my so-called friends were gone. The women were gone. Everyone left me. I was absolutely alone for the first time in my life, not knowing who I was. And anxiety exploded into my spirit, panic attacks. I went to a doctor. I was shaking. I could hardly breathe. I could hardly walk. I was shaking so bad with anxiety and panic attacks. I sat in his office. I said, please do some blood tests on me. Please take some scans. I think I may have a disease. I don't know what's wrong with me. He says, no, you have anxiety. I have something to give to you for that. It'll help you. But be careful. It's a little addictive.
Mm.
I said, I don't even know what that means. Just here, whatever.
Yeah.
So well, here's some Xanax. Here's some Xanax for you.
Xanax. Yikes.
Yeah.
Ken, we're actually take a very short break. So this is the cliffhanger. Yeah. Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a minute. You're listening to Real Recovery. Be back in just a sec. Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Kent Paul, and he's now at a point where after a successful bodybuilding career, he's waking up one day looking at himself in the mirror, probably still go, hey, I look good. But he's thinking, who am I? And there's a big hole in his heart.
And the anxiety kicks in.
So what does he do? Visit to Mr. Doctor.
I got a problem. I'm in pain.
I got something for you. It's called Xanax.
Xanax. This is going to work.
Be careful, though, because it might be addictive.
Could be.
So, Kent, was it?
Yes. I tell you what, it was addictive more than I didn't even know what was happening to me. I'd pop a pill. All of a sudden, I'd stop shaking. I could breathe. I stopped sweating. I could walk. I felt okay. I felt my world is okay now. I'm going to be fine. Okay, this is going to work. And about 3 or 4 hours later, it was just like a big curtain would come back over of darkness. And then I would feel even worse. So what is this? And I didn't know this was addiction. This is what it meant by being addictive. This is an addictive drug. You must have more to feel better. More to feel better. More, more, more. I didn't even know what was happening to me. And about 3 months later, I'm taking 10 times a normal dose. And that's when the true addict that I didn't even know existed in me. I took the mask off of performance. And I'm really glad that you talked about Michael Phelps, you know, leading into my story, because in a lot of professional athletes, I totally understand when you take the mask off of the performer and you're lost on what now, what next. And when we serve ourselves and we're self-servants of self, we will forever be empty. No matter what we do, we will remain empty in the soul and the spirit. And only when we start to serve others outside of ourselves with a higher purpose can we be filled. And that is universal. And so here I am serving the highest level of flesh. I am a bodybuilder, Mr. Colorado, with almost naked up on the stage, and everyone is worshiping my flesh. I lived for the worship of flesh.
Mm.
And that's why I got addicted to strippers also during this whole entire process, because I worshiped only the flesh of the woman and my flesh to be worshiped by others. And that obviously leaves nothing but a massive hole in my spirit. And, of course, I'm programmed to do this, take all this away. Well, now what am I going to do? I can't feel these feelings. I don't know how to deal. I have no tools for life. I've got to put something into my body to numb my state. That's what happened to Michael Phelps. And I completely can relate to that. So I'm so glad you brought this up because, you know, he's all over the news right now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, leading to that, after taking the Xanax and I'm taking 10 times the normal dose, and one night this man put a Diet Roman Coke in front of me. And again, guys, I hadn't touched alcohol. It wasn't a part of my story leading all the way up into the stage because I was so health conscious and trying to build the worship of my own flesh and my own body. And so I said, well, who cares? Yeah, give me a drink. So I took a drink, and guys, I went from complete panic state, take a Xanax to feel normal, take a drink, and now I feel good. I said, wow, Now this is living. Now this is the solution. Now this is the way to, this is going to be my life. I can do this.
Mm.
I don't have to feel any of this. I can get through life now. All I got to do is take a pill and have a quick drink. I'll get up in the morning, take a pill, have a drink. Noontime, pill and a drink. Nighttime, pill and a drink. I can do this. Well, like everything else, it works until it no longer works, until it starts to spiral out of control. And now I get into a car accident and I break my neck. And I end up in all kinds of different institutions of jails and rehabs and detox centers. And, I mean, I go into absolute utter darkness until it leads into me drinking almost a gallon of vodka a day. And that's all I was doing at that time, was just drinking pure alcohol because I couldn't play with the doctors anymore. I couldn't get myself to go to doctor's offices. I was completely broken and hidden inside of my own townhouse in Denver, Colorado. The light of day was my enemy. I only felt comfortable from the hours of 1 to 4 a.m. because that's when the rest of the world was quiet and I felt okay to be quiet. I hated when the sun came up. I hated to hear birds chirping. I couldn't stand hearing cars leave the garage doors because I felt so much anxiety that I could not be a part of the world. I had no idea how to function, and I would drink myself to oblivion, screaming out to God to let me die. And as soon as I'd pass out and I'd wake back up, I would curse his name because why won't you just let me die? There is nothing left for me to live for. My best days are behind me. There's nothing ahead of me whatsoever. There's no possible reason for me to live. Just please let me die. And that continued for probably about 6 or 7 months until one time I had the ultimate experience of darkness. About 3:30 in the morning, again, that's when I like to be awake. And I was standing. I was just kind of swaying side to side. And I suddenly saw an image to my right side. Again, I'm just in a closed-out one-bedroom townhouse in Denver by myself. The light was on. I turned to my right side. I saw an absolute pitch black, the blackest color of black you can imagine, form shaped as a person. But no face image whatsoever. There was no face. There was no outlines. It was just a shape. And it was facing me about 6 inches away from me. And I looked at it, and I knew I was in the presence of absolute demonic evil.
Hmm.
And I had a demonic experience. And I was amongst, in my perception, a lot of people don't believe me, but this is my story, this is my perception. A demon was upon me. And I turned away from it. I took a deep breath. I said, okay, I'm ready. Take me. And I took a deep breath, another deep breath, about 5-10 seconds goes by, and I was really expecting my soul to be snatched out of my body. I was waiting for my body to collapse. And I was waiting for me to leave this experience, and I was ready to go to hell. I would anything to leave this state of being. And probably what seemed to be 10 minutes was probably only about 30 seconds. Nothing was happening. I turned back away to turn back to it to look at it, and it was gone. And I was so upset that God won't take me, Satan won't take me. I was devastated. I actually wanted to go to hell. I wanted to do anything not to feel as a human being. The next morning when the light came up, I went ahead and said, I'm done with all of this. I got to take my own action. I wrote my suicide note and said goodbye to everyone. I was so sorry. I loved everyone. There's nothing anyone can do. And I took my toothbrush and bank card in my pocket, and then I left. And my plan was to go from Colorado to Sarasota, Florida, to Siesta Key Beach to end my life. That was the plan. I left about 24 hours. It turns out that they did break into my townhouse. They saw the note that broke into my bank accounts, and they started to track my bank card. They knew what highway I was on. They contacted the police, Highway State Patrol, and they started to chase me from city to city, town to town, all the way into Kansas. Out in the middle of Kansas, probably about 4 or 5 days later, when I finally got, I was moving very slow because I couldn't stop drinking from town to town, hotel to hotel. They finally caught up to me, and they had a big intervention out in the middle of Kansas, Oakley, Kansas, at a Motel 8. And it was absolutely a miracle because at that time I was using fake names and cash only. They still found me by the grace of God. intervention. I knocked on my door, opened the door. There's my parents and my Highway State Patrol local police in Kansas. And they said, please come with us. I was so angry. I yelled at them. I said, no, you can't stop this. Do not make me stop. You can't make me stop. This is my only way. And it dawned on me at that moment. I looked at my mom. I could tell that she was all shriveled up. She was sunken in. I could tell that she probably hadn't slept and drank water or ate food in days. And I realized that I was causing her so much anguish that I was killing my own mother. I said, I can't go into the afterworld knowing I killed my mother. So I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'll live a torturous life. Take me away. Brought me back to Colorado. They put me into a rehab center, Parker, Colorado. And there's when everything changed. And when the counselor looked across the table and said, okay, Kent, you know, I read your file, and can you tell me your concept of God? And I told her that God was the punisher. And she said, well, Kent, what if that's not God? What if God is a loving, merciful, best friend relationship kind of God? What if he's not the punisher? What if? My eyes got real big. I started crying. I said, I don't know how that's even possible. But I said, is that your God? And she said, yeah, Kent, that's my God. And I said, can you show me your God? And she said, yeah, Kent, I can show you my God. And guys, my whole concept of God changed. My whole world and universe changed those 30 days in rehab when I introduced a new concept to God. But only in my state of absolute, the gift of desperation, could I be open and willing to even receive a new concept of God. So like you guys said earlier in the show, I tell you, you're so right. And it is a gift. It's a gift to be broken. And being broken can be a gift, can be a great gift. Because I was so desperate, I was willing to accept anything, any kind of change to spark me out of this torturous life. And that set me on a whole new path of recovery. I got a sponsor right away. I moved into an Oxford house, and my whole entire journey changed. But I had a big awakening when I was in the Oxford house, and the president of the house overdosed on a whole bottle of rubbing alcohol. I laid him in the ground myself as a pallbearer, 60 days sober. And my sponsors say, Kent, this is no joke. People are living and dying, man. Are you all in? I said, I am all in. And guys, I tell you, I did everything my sponsor told me to do. And it launched me into a whole new world that I never knew existed. And like the book says, A New Pair of Glasses by Chuck C., I love that. And my whole life changed, my perceptions. I didn't judge people anymore. I accepted people. I loved people. I found true relationships I never knew existed, unconditional relationships in the rooms of recovery, true relationships, not being judged by the flesh. And my whole life changed, and God gave me a whole abundance of promises that came through in my life. That's like it says in the big book.
Mm-hmm.
All the promises came through in my life, and he blessed me with radio show, TV show. I was a national judge for Donald Trump's Miss USA. I wrote a book. I was the author. I was on TLC National Reality Show. I did some things with American Gladiators on NBC with Hulk Hogan. I mean, I did all these things that were so far and abundant. Above being Mr. Colorado, way above being Mr. Colorado. And it was absolutely wonderful just to serve other people and do other things in the world that was not serving my flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And then through this whole entire process, God went ahead and shut all those things down in Denver, TV show, radio show, my own gym. Of course, Donald Trump sold the Miss Universe to run for president, so that's over. So I'm no longer a national judge for Donald Trump. And everything shifted me down to Florida. I come down to Boca Raton, Florida. Never been here before. God put it into my spirit that he wants me in Boca. I come down here blind in faith, didn't know one single person. I come here, and I go to a meeting into the rooms of recovery, and I find out that I'm in a rehab capital of the world. And I had no idea. God shut down all my promises in Colorado, which I was very painful. And it was in the bottom of my recovery, and I actually said, God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you shutting down all the promises you gave me in recovery? Because he has another better blessing, a bigger rainbow in my life in Florida.
Yeah.
Because this is the rehab cub. And within about 7 months, now I have a radio show called My Recovery Radio, similar to your radio show here in West Palm Beach. And I'm sharing the message and living the dream and helping. And wow.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a miracle what can happen, you know, having a spiritual life and just trusting God, trusting the process, and thanking Him for the storms of life, because the only way that we get our rainbows is after the storms. I tell you guys, recovery is real.
Mm.
This thing does work.
It does indeed.
Last month, I celebrated 10 years recovery. I just want to praise God.
That's awesome.
I'm so blessed. And I want to thank you guys for your service as well.
Yeah, Kent, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to have one more segment with Kent. Paul, thanks for listening. We'll be right back. George, I got to give Danimal some credit there. He got Cinnamon Girl. He knew what to play.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
There.
Well, he listens to the show every week. He has to.
I get that.
He's in the call room. What? How many calls have we gotten in the 2 years you've been doing it? One?
We tend to get like 10 to 15, but,
we don't let anyone
on. I don't
want
to bother you guys with calls.
No, this is art and science coming together.
No, I don't want to bother you guys with
that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, we're still wrapping up our conversation with Kent Paul. What a story, George. Really,
it's
really amazing.
Story.
I know you've been a little quiet tonight. I think you had a question for him.
Well, I was just wondering, Kent, who is Jesus Christ to you?
Well, you know, I was reintroduced to him about 7 months ago, actually, through a recovering meth addict. Said a friend of a friend here in South Florida to me that she found some freedom at a church, at a place called Victory Church, and I just couldn't believe that she could actually be relieved from the bondage of addiction to church. I've been so church hurt my whole life. I just had a hard time with that. And I went to this church because of her, and I went in there, and I really saw absolutely pure love in this church, and people just happy and praising and lifting their hands up, and I just felt a difference between – and I kind of explain it like this. In recovery, I just found a new God that was merciful and kind, the God that was kind of surrounding the love of God around me. And what I learned was to be able to really see Jesus Christ, the man that he was. Jesus Christ chose to spend his time with people like me, the drug addict, the alcoholic, the criminal, the outcast of society. He went and washed their feet. I had a whole new vision of an absolute unconditional type love of Jesus, the Son of God, chose time with someone like me. Alcoholic, drug addict, and a new love vision came into my spirit, like, wow. And all of a sudden, in the rooms of recovery, it went from almost like this. I kind of shared like this. The love of God around me to the love of Christ in me. And that was the shift. It was really a shift. It happened about 7 months ago here in Boca Raton, Florida. God outside of me, loving me, to Jesus Christ, the love in me, who could relate to me because he walked as a man on this planet just like I did. And he had unmerciful, unconditional love of people like me. He didn't choose to spend time with the kings and queens and all the fancy rich people in the land. He chose to hang his time with me and fishermen. And I just really saw a whole new vision. Wow. This man, I was blown away. And again, guys, I'm a preacher's kid. I've heard every Bible story 100 times. I don't want to hear any more. Don't tell me a scripture. No. Stop talking about the Bible. I was so repelled from it for so long until I was finally ready and open, again, willing to see Christ in a whole new way. And my spirit exploded. And I've been reading the Bible every single morning since then. A whole new thirst to get to know Jesus in a deep, intimate way because I see him differently. The friend of the man who relates to me and knows exactly as a human flesh. So the personal relationship exploded, the personal relationship. And that's the change that happened for me.
I love that. And that's what we want to have happen, Bill. I think if you encounter Christ, he's irresistible to you. And one of the ways you know that you have a relationship is you want to spend time with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have an encounter with Christ, You want to spend time in the Word, and you want to spend time at church and praying with other believers.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something we do on our own. And one of the characteristics for all addicts is isolation. And so they get into the club rooms, and people are changing, and they're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're welcome. Come on in. All you got to do is have a desire to be there, and you can be there. And once that builds, and we do have a lot of people that have bad experiences with church, I think what they do really is have bad experience with Christians. And so I think we need to watch it, that we want to share the love rather than tell people what they should do. We want to love them up and get them into the Word. God will tell them what they should do. And I think people, I was talking to somebody the other day, they're a recovering Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what that is, but it sounds like a good excuse to not have a relationship with God. And whenever we see that, I want to encourage them to ask Jesus in their heart. Because if you read Matthew 5, 6, and 7, how can you not want to have a relationship with Christ? Bill?
Very true. Yeah, very true. And it's also kind of sad to say to the pastors out there, hey, your kids are kind of rebelling against your sermons.
Well, I could see that. I mean, you know, I rebelled against my dad until I was 40, and I think for a lot of us we do that. But the thing here that I really like about your story, Ken, and it's just fascinating, is how you got sober and you had an early encounter with God, and you come back home. Because, see, nothing else works. Here's a guy, Bill, that had a ton of success. It's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, when he starts taking the Xanax, there's a tolerance, and you got to take more, and there's a withdrawal. And my experience has been, I do that with sin. Sin might start off a little bit, but I got to do more and more and more of it. And when I'm not doing it, I go into withdrawal. So there's a mimic to me, a mirror of addiction and sin. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's still an escapism.
Yeah.
Whatever's allowing us to escape away, and sin is an escape, and addiction is an escape. It's all an escape mechanism that once we escape through something once, we need even more of it next time to be able to make the shift of escapism.
Well, it's basically the way your brain is wired, too. If you get a little dopamine release, the same stimulus doesn't produce the same results, so you have to change the stimulus to try to get a new amount of dopamine to at least meet or exceed where you were before. So there starts the cycle, and it never goes well.
Well, as a recovering addict, anything that changes how I feel, changes how I think, changes my mood, I got to watch it, because as soon as I got done doing it, I want to do it again, but I want to do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this moderation thing, not really interested. I'm an all-in guy. But the one thing I can be all in on is my walk with God. And that really is the only thing that gives me the dividends back to reinforce to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ken, I've often seen people like yourself, and you have the ability to thrive. You obviously excelled in sports, and then you excelled in bodybuilding. You know how to thrive, and that's achieved through self-discipline, denial, all the stuff that a lot of people, they don't want to pay that price. So you obviously had a tremendous respect for what you were doing and how hard you were working, and yet drugs can still come in with an empty soul and ravage a person down to nothing.
Yeah, it's not biased for anyone, and that's why it must know it's not just for the hobos and the homeless. I mean, this gets the top CEOs. It gets. I've had people on my show that was making $800,000 a week. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the discipline and the drive and who and what you've accomplished in the world. We're all subject to have this addiction. We have an empty spot in our soul. And I love that, you know, we all are born with a God-shaped hole in us.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we going to choose to put into that hole? A hole that only God can fill the shape of it.
Mm-hmm.
That does not matter who or what you are on this planet. And only God and every single person from country to country in our entire planet, this only can be filled with God. So it doesn't really matter the character of the person, the discipline of the person, the success of the person. We're all the same in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kent, your story is absolutely fascinating. You tell it so well. God has obviously given you the gift of communication. And I know you've given a lot of people hope, because this story, it covers every base out there, George.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, there's... anything that could have gone wrong went wrong with Kent and his recovery, and I mean his addiction, and it got him into a place where As he was off to kill himself, he got rescued, and God stepped in and saved his life. Well, Kent, thanks so much for being on the show. We loved having you. And if you want to pass this episode on to your friends, a podcast of the show will be available on myfaithradio.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Kent, thanks so much. Have a great week, and God bless you.
God bless you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Kent. Well, George, like I say, it once again wraps up another episode of Real Recovery and another award-winning episode, I believe. I'm sure the reviews will be in that we'll win another award and that we have to build another trophy case, and that's what we do.
It's what we do. We care.
We care. We care deeply. Thanks so much for listening. So glad you joined us tonight. Have a very blessed week. We love you. Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.